Dr. Brad Stocks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Peter.
Yeah, good afternoon, ma'am.
I would like to know if you could find out something for me. Is there any truth that a law passed in 2019 that you must have a mailbox in order to get your mail?
I'm not aware.
Well, I am hearing that, so I would like to...
You have a mailbox?
No, I don't.
So where does your mail come normally?
It usually push into the house.
And it's still coming into the house?
No, it's not anymore.
So where is it coming?
It's not coming at all.
Or it's not coming?
No. So when I called and complained, I was told that the law passed in 2019 that you must have a mailbox for the postman to put your mail in. And I asked other people and nobody knows of it. Yeah. So I would like if it is possible you could find out.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I have a mailbox, and I've always had a mailbox. The producer is telling me that, to the best of his knowledge, there's no such rule. What I would say to you, though, ma'am, consider this. A postman has to make a delivery run, and every time a postman has to approach your house, that person has to stop the bike, disembark, and they have to actually go to your house and go through the window and drop the mail in the window.
No, they don't have to come get off the bike. The house is so close to the road that they don't have to get off the bike.
Okay. Well, just consider that for many other people, they have to get off the bike and they have to
go. Yeah, I could understand that.
I think a lot of us need to also think about the fact that there are less post people these days and we have to make their life easier. It is probably best you construct your mailbox in a location. You should have a mailbox, firstly.
There's a law for it. I wanted to know.
Yeah, that I don't know. I don't know, ma'am. I don't know.
That's the part that I wanted to know.
I don't know, but I am just saying for purposes of public information, I think that we all need to be moving towards having mailboxes and also having them placed in a location that the postman can access it without having to disembark their bicycle. Or the
sometimes you might have a mailbox and the person might still have to disembark because of all houses are not near to the road. So you might have a mailbox, but you might still have to
Ma'am, you understand the point I'm making? I don't know whether or not there's a law in place, but I just think that as we develop as a society, we need to A, have mailboxes, and B, have mailboxes placed in locations that they are accessible. If that is not possible, then fine. But I'm just saying that I think it would be wise for you to get a mailbox, the earliest available opportunity. The post office sells them, and I think the cheapest mailbox costs like about $30, right? I got a really nice one that was a little bit more expensive, but it was silver, and I like shiny silver things. So I bought that version, but you can get one a lot cheaper. Unfortunately, it is red, but then some people like red, and you can, as long as you don't associate it with the BLP. So you can get a red mailbox for like $30.
Okay? I just wanted to find out what I want to find out. Okay,
so I don't know. I got to see if anyone else... somebody here on the WhatsApp is saying, I was told by the postman to move the mailbox from the side of the house and put it at the gate. I was told that the postman should not be entering your property. So this is somebody else is saying the same type of thing, and they're saying that they were told to put the mailbox on the gate because the postman shouldn't be entering your property. I think that we kind of get into that stage now, and I know that in more developed societies, the rule is that the postman should be able to stay on the road and drop off the mail. He should not have to, or she should not have to actually enter the premises. But this thing of pushing it through a window is a Barbadian thing. And I could understand that, we kind of like it that way,
Okay, all right, ma'am.
If any other information comes in, though, I will read it. Okay? Take care. Thanks a lot. This is Dr. Brad Stocks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Peter.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yeah, how are you doing, sir?
Good.
All right, Raul here.
Hey, Raul, how are you doing? Long time no hear.
There's room for improvement, but I'm okay, thanks.
Good. You're okay. You said there's room for improvement?
Well, there's always room for improvement. Life is structured on that.
Oh, yeah.
There's always room for improvement. Mm-hmm. You never get to the ultimate, there's always room for that improvement. Yeah. Okay, I want to start today with this landfill situation, and then I'll give you a little conclusion, a little bit of politics. But let me hasten to ask the question. When is this? Look, the front page of today's paper say recent landfill fires dating from all back in 2005 to up to yesterday. Now, when will this stop? What kind of cost this will cost the authorities? What would be... Could you understand that yesterday, all the effort for, from 205, every time there's a cost, what is the cost? This is not to be lingering. When will we stop this sort of... This can be avoided.
Yeah.
I know, the paper is saying that the government is looking at buying a shredder for $500,000. Now, I remember vividly, there was an attempt to that landfill that was for the metal dump. There was a shredder down there, and they were going to shred up everything at Richard Brand Furniture and send out
this,
that, all
this,
of that.
This steel, though, is metal. It was a metal dump.
Yeah, no, I'm saying the shredder was down there, but
right,
metal.
But this is not. But this is for metal, to deal with metal, not
right,
not rubber.
There's a shredder. Isn't? I don't know.
It's not the same kind of shredder, but I get your point. Yeah.
Right. So I'm saying that the whole long and short is that this plan around with garbage needs to be brought to a definitive. We need to get on top of this whole garbage thing and going to the nucleus of it and start to turn it around. Unless we do this, we're going to be spinning our top in mud.
Yeah.
Now, we just had a whole set of garbage truck and whatever. We had the unprecedented amount of garbage piled up for some time up to the sky. Okay, we never want to see that in the history of our business again. I can understand the garbage truck, but ultimately, if you get to recycling and all of what that offers, you will end up, the garbage truck isn't going to be the issue no more, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So recycling is the thing that would have to curb all of this. Now, I heard Mr. Cherry last night on the radio. He was a guest with Ken Husbands. I am saying that he was saying landfill is going to become like, you're going to need landfill. Landfill becoming obsolete. You can't fill up all your time in landfill. When, and garbage is money. Why the authorities can't stop and understand and start to expand the energy and the avenue of making money.
Roll.
Yes, please.
You're preaching to the converted, huh? Let me just tell you that we are doing a better job of managing our garbage now than we were, let's say, 10, 15 years ago.
Okay.
I do think that we have had some challenges. We have been able to reduce our output of garbage. We've been able to manage our garbage better under this current arrangement that we have at SBRC. But I agree with you that the situation with the tires is a problem that cannot be entertained any longer. We cannot continue with this nonsense of having fires every so often. I understand the reason for the combustion. I understand the reason why the management of tires is particularly problematic. And the fact is that we have to bite the bullet. As the minister said, we will have the shredder on island. We will have to use that for the time being. If an opportunity comes for us to use the material that's being generated differently, then, you know, so be it. But
the tires belong
to us. We generate them.
Okay. All the garbage, as a matter of fact, that can be recycled belongs to us. But I am saying, for the life of me, I cannot follow. Look, there's the bees out there that has done remarkably well in Barbados.
Mm-hmm.
People clean up gullies, send torches down gully, cut up fridge, old stove, old carrying, and carry the bees to recycle. A Herculean effort and a commendable effort. I can't understand what's happening in Barbados. Sorry to show you here. I don't want to be over emotional on this. But the point is, what is the definitive in Barbados as getting bees up and running and these recycling and all the recycling entities? However, what is the issue?
But those recycling entities have taken a lot of the burden off the main dump in terms of plastics, in terms of paper, in terms of cans, in terms of bottles.
Yes.
They've done an excellent job where that is concerned. But we have a particular challenge with this type of recyclable called tires. Well, they're not recyclable. That's the problem. It's just rubber.
Okay.
And the problem with it is that it is bulky. They trap air and it is highly combustible. And
but
the thing is, when the tires start burning, it don't stop.
We know this. But they were saying that you can recycle
right. Tires,
and it's something with the alpha and
we need to deal with it. And I hear about that, but they're saying that the quantities that we produce are too small for
but
that.
Something,
so,
look, there has to be a solution, though, Peter. All I'm saying in short, there has to be a solution. Get on the solution. We cannot have this ongoing.
Yeah.
Ongoing.
What's the other point, Rob?
Politics, you made a lovely slide to the remark about competitive politics and things, and you only get something when there's competition or whatever. Now, pray tell me, who would ever want to rush up against the current government under the leadership of Ms. Motley in the next coming election because with the amount of achievement so far, the averting of the devaluation, all the other things, the structuring and restructuring the foreign debt, the stability, whatever. I would want to see the person with the tenacity that will want to risk going up
Verla,
against
him. Verla DePisa tells us that she has a long line of politics, people. Sir? She has a long list of people that are waiting to contest the next election.
I can't nominate somebody for the down in there.
No, she can't. She hasn't, but she has lists of people. This is what she says, that she has long numbers of people waiting, anxious to be nominated to contest these various seats.
That is only in one part of the faction. Where the other party factions thing? Because she's not. Don't forget, there's the faction. There's the you know how the Princess Margaret meeting with four persons up there, and she was not part of the of that contingent. But then there's also another faction with Mr. Stephen Lassie. He's also they're factions. So she can only speak for that faction that she's in charge of. But the whole thing inside of there is they're all with their independent pursuit, which is interesting in Barbados. So you would want to see who's going to go up against Ms. Molly. It's going to be so interesting. It's going to be profound.
We never know. Patrick might come back. Patrick Todd.
You're being facetious, sir. And I could, don't laugh.
But listen, I remember saying last time I talked, so the time I was being facetious too. Because you got to be a really strong individual with a very strong constitution to run against Mia Motley.
But he was the man that did it.
He got 400 votes. There are 400 people in my neighborhood.
We're not paying a lot, sir.
But there are 400 people in my neighborhood that believe that
somebody get
he should be elected over
me. That's what you call you playing a lot, huh? Somebody get 485 votes, you get 22. Man, come on. They don't want to stop it.
So.
Now, listen. If the Barbados Labour Party will lose any seat for argument's sake, it will not be to the DLP, you know.
It will be to the DLP.
I have
already expressed my view regarding the two seats that I think are likely to cross over in the next election. And I'm looking at St. John, I'm looking at St. Philip North.
We'll cross over and do what?
In the next election.
Uh-huh.
And my feeling, I told you, St. John and St. Philip North.
Do what?
Those were the two seats that I think are most likely to come back to the Democratic Labour Party. And I think it would be in the DLP's interest to put good candidates in those seats ASAP. So whoever is think Verla should find herself either St. Philip or St. John.
You know that we had Mr. Hamilton last day writing two articles about one snap election, and the next one will be telling the D's don't apologize. You read those two articles. I know.
I did, and I know. I read those articles, and I also remember what happened in Antigua, because in Antigua that's exactly what Gaston Brown did, because the opposition was there waiting, saying that they got time, and Gaston dropped an election in them, and all the time they had, they were scampering, and they ended up with less seats than they had before.
But the point I'm making is that if with all the of the achievement, what snap election would be necessary? I thought a snap election, as you are a political expert, would be vain. You're in the avenue of sprint now you got the persons on that kind of thing. But if you're not in that precarious situation politically, you will have to consider snap election?
So nice you do a snap election to strengthen your hand. I mean, that's what Theresa May did. She did a snap election to strengthen her hand, and it didn't work out.
Who named this house snap election to?
Who's this?
But it didn't. Patrick Manning.
Patrick Manning had a snap election and lost.
Okay, so if you go that side, it can come this side.
Yeah, but I mean, with Gaston Brown, it worked out for him quite well.
Okay.
He increased his majority. In this instance, I don't know what would be the benefit of Prime Minister Motley calling a snap election, because isn't there any more seats to win? Unless you want to get back, St. Michael West. But my sense is that she doesn't really have any good reason to call an election.
And a closing comment here. This is it. I'm saying to you, and you being an authority, I want you to look at. I keep saying I don't really debate heavily on Turkey Love. I usually debate the ratio of the vote. Mm-hmm. You can't get no 22 votes and somebody get 100, 200 votes and tell me. But look, so you got to bring all that ratio first. before we start to talk about looking. Why you're not discussing the race with me?
All right, fair enough.
I can hear you.
Ralph, thanks a lot for calling. Let me take a break. I'll come right back. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. I've been asked to remind you that the annual Dean's Lecture will be held next Tuesday. The reverend that will be delivering the annual Dean's Lecture is very reverend Father Sean Campbell. Sorry, let me just read that again. The very reverend Sean Major Campbell out of Jamaica. He's the Dean of Kingston, Jamaica. And he'll be speaking on the topic, The Christian Faith in the Public Square, Justice, Compassion, and Humility. This is at 7:30 at the Frank Collymore Hall, and it's the annual Dean's Lecture. Next week, Tuesday, 11th, 2020. I will be there. I have a profound interest in Christianity, even though I am not a believer. I still do find lectures of this type interesting, and I look forward to hearing Major Campbell. I understand that he is a provocative reverend and somebody who always brings a message that is enlightening and thought-provoking. So next week, Tuesday at 7:30, Frank Collymore Hall. Down to Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Beckham. How are you?
Mr. Stricker Stenentry, how are you, sir? You're a little late
I'm
today.
I'm good.
Yeah. I guess no, better Beckham, late than never.
No, Mr. Beckham, last week you said that you will be coming every other week.
Right.
So I did.
I got a reprieve.
Know. No, but I scheduled some things for today. Then I got a call that you're on, and I had to reschedule.
Right.
I've spoken to Mr. Ellis on numerous occasions about giving us a schedule of the week on Sundays, and even to get the morning operator to say who will be coming on the program so that if you want to get into the program, you can make your arrangements to suit.
In fairness, though, we have a schedule which could easily be put on online, but there was a change necessitated by Corey's travel, so, you know. But I get your point. I appreciate your point.
Anyhow, Mr. Beckham, last week we spoke about Mr. Barrow.
Yes.
And you ended up telling me that I submerged to the top. So I take it that your soul on that statement by him submerged to the top. So I'm hoping that in time you will be sold to on the statement by him, do not build any monuments onto me. Right? Now you know that the DLP bought the Kennington at George Street, right?
That's right, yeah.
And they went on to build the auditorium there, right?
That's right, next door.
With a lot of Mr. Barrow's physical blood, sweat, and tears. Yeah. And they had proposed to name it after him. And he made a resounding no. So much so that they didn't even name it after nobody else. They name it after the street. George Street Auditorium. So they respected his wishes. So it is, you know, disgraceful for you to be telling me that other people disrespect his wishes, the DLP, and do nothing for him.
What has the DLP done to recognize his memory?
Well, they gave him
a day
on his birthday, which was a subtle thing and not billing anything.
Okay. Very nice.
And remember,
what about the Arabara scholarships?
No, wait a minute, Mr. Kerr. Even that was kicked against. So when other people come now and want to do all of these things, they're kicked against a simple day.
Right.
A simple day.
What about the scholarships? Is that appropriate or inappropriate?
Well, here again, now, that's another thing, Mr. Vickham. Offering scholarships to Mr. Barnum, especially in the areas that he was an expertise, is a very good thing. But to come to pick and choose goes against his grain. Anytime Mr. Barr doing anything, it is free for all, whosoever will may come. Do not discriminate. He was one that was bitterly against means testing. So if you can put something in his name, respect what he stands for. If there, who want to be whatever, you offer, let them come and do it. Don't tell me you put no categories and it restricted to this and it restricted to that, and you doing it in his name. If you want to restrict it, put it in somebody's name, because that gone against his grain. So that's another disgrace again, then, Mr. Wickham.
A gentleman on WhatsApp is saying, Peter, my wife for the third time caught me in an adulterous situation and threatened to end our marriage. I asked her to refrain from such since I was offering my forgiveness. In my opinion, sir, the scenario is akin to the leader of the Democratic Labour Party telling us that they will not hold the blows inflicted upon them in the last election against us. You just can't make this mess up. What does Mr. Straker's tenantry have to say about that?
But I will let out their pass outside your stand. Because it's not a caller.
That was sweet, though.
I mean, she was reflect on the caller.
Listen, that was sweet. But I heard the wife three times.
But listen to me.
Has
listen
offered
to me,
his
Wickham.
Forgiveness. And he is comparing that to what Verna has said about your party.
Oh, you listen to me, Mr. Wickham, right? I thought he let that pass the city off stand. The other day, I saw an article in the paper. And it had two fellas dressed alike. Mm-hmm. And apparently there was wearing the world's best husband or something so mm-hmm. on their shirts.
You saw that in the newspaper?
I saw something like that in the newspaper. You know,
see that
I didn't
in the newspaper?
I didn't read it, or I didn't give it in a second.
Look, you ain't seen it in the newspaper, and you're being nasty. No, you know what happens when you're nasty.
No, I'm not being nasty, Mr. Wickham.
You're being nasty, because there was nothing in the newspaper. With two men wearing any shirts. So I know where you're going with that. But this is typical of a Democratic Labour Party. Someone tells you something that is true, and this is where you're going.
Hold a minute.
Where are you going with this conversation?
I told you.
Is this something that we're going to entertain, or are we going to go on to the next caller?
The choice is yours, Mr. Wickham. Mm-hmm. I told you I saw it in the newspaper. Two fellas dressed alike. I want you to be clear. They're dressed alike. In a shirt or a top and a pants.
Strickers, I want to wish you a blessed and a wonderful day. Thank you so much for calling. It's been good chatting with you. We are not going to waste more time on this nonsense this week again. What has been done. And there wasn't any pictures with nobody in no shirt in the newspaper. There was a picture on the newspaper on the front page. Let us move on. Down to Brass Tacks, good afternoon, and welcome to the next caller.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wickham.
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Not bad. Yeah. A couple of things here. I am not convinced that ever. I was just reading a lady by the name of Mrs. Maureen Elizabeth Taylor, all the comments, and yeah. It has a kind of concern with your thing about the Prime Minister being... one of the best things that we had for quite a while in Barbados, and concerning Rawl.
That my thing about the Prime Minister, Rawl's thing?
Yeah, Rawl's thing, okay. Sorry. And that Rawl is convinced that she could be, not. She, if it is quite a giant to really win the next election. But she wanted to remind Rawl that elections is not, today election is not won on the older people, but as young people who we're looking forward to these promises and these goodies that were supposed to be distributed after the Barbados Labour Party got the victory, mm-hmm. which Marshall Cardo invited some of her spot meetings and Karen Villas to promise the young people there, so all these things. Mr. Roy, Downey Farm, all these things. You also said that the two seats that most liable to go. She agreed with that, but there's also they're looking at also the St. Michael Sanctuary back about to St. Michael West. This young people was promised by the Speaker of the House that he would do this and do that. As a matter of fact, they don't see him. His office is there. It's never open. So this next election is not going to be for the young people. And the young people will be determining who they will and they will not want to put in. She's also convinced that you have now taken a front row seat in the gates of hell. So I will let you your response, sir.
This is in the newspaper?
I don't know.
Yeah. A lot of people feel like I'm going to hell, but not a problem. I can tell you that I can go a lot of friends there. It sounds like we're going to have a whale of a time. But, yeah, that part, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I might be, but, you know, what could I tell you? The other questions were relating to the DLP, and she's disagreeing with my views on the DLP and saying that she thinks that the speaker might be one that's going.
My comments
in relation to the two seats are based not on any contemporary analysis of anything that is happening currently on the ground. It's based on the fact that historically, unless a person has gained, normally when a seat is over 60%, that is considered a safe seat. 65% is a relatively safe seat. In terms of the history of Barbados, in the region generally speaking, once you get past 65%, it's considered a safe seat. The traditional swings that we have in elections outside of the last one will normally not dislodge a seat that is as well entrenched as 60-something percent. So my reason for saying that is basically those are the only two seats in Barbados that are below that 65% threshold. And it's against that background, especially when you consider the history of those two seats, that those were the two that are most likely to bounce back because they are closest to the bar, so to speak, closest to the post. I appreciate that there may be some dynamics in other constituencies, but normally a constituency with a misbehaving MP can withstand most normal swings where the level of support is above 65%. And that's what I would say to that. But of course, I appreciate that there are a number of people who are disappointed. There's also the case of St. Michael Northwest, which might be an interesting one. That was also a very strong seat. My concern is that I thought it was artificially strong because of the quantity of resources that were poured into it by the former member of parliament. While the other two, to me, have genuine strength. Now, the question is whether the current person that is coming after that member of parliament would be in a position to pour the level of resources in as well. And if he doesn't, would he be able to fare well as Chris might have?
But you know, it's strange enough, though, that what you said about St. Philip Murphy is quite true. Because a lot of people who are voting for Dr. Sonia Brown, they are not convinced that she's going to remain back the seat. And if you talk to the people in St. Michael North, a lot of them tell us that they're not convinced that Sonia has really got the community as she ought to, and they don't really see her. And you know, there are some politicians that the pockets are very tight. And once you don't spend, you know how it is. Mm-hmm. The other thing, though, that I had to was referring to you, I realize, Mr. Wickham?
Yeah, I'm listening, sir.
I realize that you are one of my followers on Instagram.
Oh, okay. I never post anything on Instagram, but I do follow several people.
I know you didn't post it, but I realize that you are my followers.
Okay, good. I will have to look for you on that. this guy here is saying that the 30 constituencies and Prime Minister Molly only represents one. All of the other candidates can be vulnerable, and that's something that Raul needs to understand. What do you say in response, sir?
Before I go, though, what do you think about...
You're not responding to that comment?
The person is right, because a lot of those candidates were weak candidates, but they want all the shirt tail of, I wish you know too, all the shirt tail of Mia Motley, who
is
strong.
But suppose Mia Motley shirt tail, coat tail long this time around?
Well, they will win again.
But all 30 seats? So you gain them all 30 again?
It could happen. Yeah. It happened. But you think about it, you must look at Vera De Pisa on Facebook. She's a very attractive woman. I know that she was quite attractive to look at her taking a picture there. So.
But what does that have to do with it, sir?
Pardon me?
What does that have to do with it?
No, it doesn't have anything to do with it, but I think I did first really look at the lady that close. What do you think about her being... Because I am trying to get...
My evaluation of Verla is entirely based on her performance as Member of Parliament. I think the idea of us looking at a female Member of Parliament and commenting on her looks is unfortunate.
No. Let me explain myself to you. I'm trying to do something off this, but so that the viewers can vote online as the top 10 most attractive over 40 professional women that we have about Barbados.
But sir, I got a problem with that.
Why is that?
But why would you be doing that? Women and not men? Why are you not doing it? You would rate the most attractive women?
No, the viewers, they could vote for it. Or like,
I know, but I don't. But what does one achieve by an assessment like that?
Well, you got, well, that's in the United States.
But I don't, and I don't agree with it there either.
Well, so there's nothing wrong with that?
Sir, a professional woman has to be assessed based on her capacity to deliver whatever, whether it be an accounting, politics, law, medicine, whatever.
You're talking about her profession.
Why do you need a doctor to be pretty?
And as you probably doctors do, God, the doctors, professional barbers do not attract a lot of attractive females.
So you think doctors be ugly? But in sir, in terms of your ability to deliver medicine, right? Doctor gotta be good looking. Why would the doctor need to be good looking?
I never said that. Okay, so they don't attractive females in profession, as I tell you.
No, you see, sir, I've done a lot of work in this whole gender and politics issue. And some time ago, I had done some research. I believe it was UN Women. We did a picture assessment of the same kind of thing. We asked people which women they would vote for. And there was one of the girls of the four. None of the people are actual MPs. But we just had a tight. One of the girls of the four was actually quite pretty. You know, she had all the pretty looks and whatnot. And that was, ironically, the person that was least popular in terms of support. The picture that people identified most was a picture that looked like a fairly aggressive, working woman, if you could understand what I mean. I'm trying to choose my words carefully. So what I would suggest to you, I don't know about medicine, but in politics, I don't know that people vote for prettiness, which is not to say that some of the female MPs that we have are not pretty. It's just that it is not a criteria on which people appear to want to vote, or should they, because it's not part of the margin. Certainly, you don't vote for men based on the extent to which they're good looking. I mean, goodness knows. If that were the case, you know, you would have some serious challenges.
There's got voting for the House of Men too.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, it used to be a barber small time. I think Motley was one time he was one of these House of Men, the barber stuff. Yeah, but really? Even okay. Dennis Johnson was a maker at one time.
But you see, I remember years ago they had something, and I remember George Pilgrim was in it. This is probably the most eligible bachelor as a politician. And they had George and Richard Seedy. But this was politicians that are not married, you know. All right, sir, we're going to have to take a break. We'll be right back. Oh, no, sorry, we don't have to take a break. Okay, the producer was telling me that it's time to step up the pace because it is 41 minutes past the hour of 1 and we still have quite a few calls on the board. So good afternoon and welcome.
Good afternoon, Peter.
Yes, sir, how are you doing?
I know Rich back.
Yeah. Okay, sorry about that earlier.
Yeah. We were dealing with, you should know your hero. Mm-hmm. And then it went on, they extended and said we should know why this person was a hero.
Sure.
I have a question mark. Now, we're going to name some names. Now, you remember 1937? I heard about 1937. The other thing, that 1966. They had two disturbances, 1966 and 1937, but I witnessed 1966. Now, I want you to look at Clement Payne. I want to look at your grandfather, Mr. Wickham, and I want to look at Eric Seeley. Now, your father represented, your grandfather represented the media and the sectors with the newspaper. And he, of himself, he had many newspapers who used to discuss the social issues in the country because there were no radio as such like today. Now, mm-hmm. I am confused about how Clement Payne became a hero. Now, Eric Seeley motivated this country on more than one thing. I believe he kept more meetings than Clement Payne. I would like somebody to tell me what Clement Payne actually did that caused him to be a hero. Let me go a little further. The disturbance that we had in 1966 had some similarities that what took place in 1937. The mashing up of business places, called a witness, where bread cards was pushed into the American store bicycles were taken and thrown overboard, cars were licked up, and such like in 1966. All because Supremes were to perform that night, and some police officer caused some problem, and the people start getting on in a manner which was similar to the disturbance.
So you're saying it was the Supremes?
Yeah, the Supremes. The Supremes was to perform and what was...
But not the night of the riot.
Yes, yes. Now, what ignited 37 riots? Mm. Nothing to do with Clement Payne. As such, he did not let anything. So as to say that he did that, the people that was around Clement Payne with his departure motivated such things. But what is serious about the issue is that during 1937, people were shot. But 1966, we didn't have that. So as a colony, with the amount of people that lost their lives, and what they lost their lives for, it was simple. People came into town not knowing anything about anywhere. But because of the martial law was read and there was no radio, people went about their business as usual. And the policemen had the martial law in their hands and shot people that didn't even have a clue that there was such a riot. Now, I want you to find time out to tell me what Clement Payne did that caused him a hero, apart from doing just what Eric Seeley did, keeping meetings. I would say Eric Seeley did more than him, because you ever remember that Eric Seeley went into Parliament to get a mess from in Parliament?
Yeah, yeah. It was Eric Flay that did that?
Yes.
Okay. It was somebody in there. It was Eric Flay did it.
He also went up by the Governor General who laid down in front of the gate. Those were some disturbances that the average man would not do. I want somebody to tell me what it really was. Apart from keeping meetings and mobilizing people to listen to his social cries, tell me if he went and said, well, you cannot do this unless we do that. Hmm. Nothing so, but yet
I got you. I will defer to the Trevor Marshalls, the Professor Beckles of this world, of this country, and ask them to answer that question, since I frankly am not really in a position, even David Commission, I'm not in a position to answer the history. What I can tell you, though, is that by virtue of the fact that he was removed from Barbados, he was sent to be deported.
Trinidad.
Right. I think that is what made the difference.
But he did not do it.
I know, but the point I'm making, sir, is that he was singled out for oppression. When you hear the story of Nelson Mandela, it is clear that he was not the only one. He was one of many. He was one of many that was sent to Robben Island. He was one of many that was oppressed. The point was that he stood out for some reason. And there were certain leadership characteristics that he got, he held on to. And the more important thing is that when you're locked up for that length of time, it makes it essential you become precisely. So I'm saying that him.
Is Mandela. Mandela was staying up for something. Mm. He was staying up for something. But here it is. Clement Payne was talking about the issue. And if you look at... And the reason why that became an issue, because we were still a colony. And as soon as deaf people were being killed, the commission asked for an inquiry.
Yeah.
The fact behind it is that the innocent people had nothing to do with the riot. I read in this book where a young man came to town to do something for his mother, and his belly was blown out by a police officer. Mm-hmm. Nothing whatsoever. Another woman with a vendor selling her fruit, not knowing what going on, she got shot. I would advise you, as a caller, for you to read the memoirs of Winter Crawford.
I will take a look. You know, I can tell you, though, sir, that it's not really a priority of mine. In terms of my reading and also writing, there are a number of contemporary issues that I want to engage a lot more quickly than that period, which is not to say that period is not important. It's just that I think that period is ground that has been very well covered by others. So the point you're making is a pertinent one, and I think it ought to be investigated. It's just that I don't know if I am that person.
Yeah, because naturally speaking, as I said, I did not see 1937 disturbance. but I could tell you I witnessed 1966 disturbance. Mm-hmm. And it was something similar. The only difference was that no one got killed. But mm-hmm. if you see or you read about the innocent people that got shot by the by the police officers, you would understand that in truth and in fact, it was a Clement Pay. It was his supporters who started the little disturbance, but Clement Pay had already gone. Mm-hmm. So I want it to be investigated to find out if whether or not Clement Payne is a true hero, as people telling you. If Clement Payne is a hero, Eric Seeley should be one. Thank you, Peter.
Okay. All right. Probably not Eric Flay, but yeah, I got your point. Down to Brass Tacks, good afternoon. We have, what, four calls remaining. We have 6 minutes. Let's see what we can do. Good afternoon and welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wickham.
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
The call you have, I thought about the doctors being pretty, should be pretty. Just tell him that Benjamin, especially secretly, I admire aggressive women, but I don't really admit it.
Sorry, Benjamin secretly admire what?
Aggressive women.
Oh, aggressive women. It isn't yeah. Beijing, you know, it was a regional survey, sir.
Yeah, but I thought we hear Benjamin admires, secretly admires aggressive women. That's a known fact, but I don't really admit it.
Okay.
Anyway. Yeah. Your talk was beside you was really hilarious. Mm-hmm. I said it before, I can say it again, right? Mm-hmm. In February 2016, a friend of mine, a major friend of mine who now lives in St. Lucia, sent me a recording from what was then really St. Lucia. It was a religious program. And the person there was well versed in the history of the times when the Bible was written. And he said that most people who read the Bible don't know what they're reading, and they always bring a lot of they always put it, interject their own thoughts into it. For example, he says he always hears how Jesus was arguing with rabbis in the temple over law. He said that's not possible because the temple is the priest of the priest, not the rabbi. The rabbi is never going to the temple, stuff like that. But what I learned in Sunday school is what was actually transmitted at the talks on slavery here in 2002, and one of our centers when it was asked. So the images to be removed from places of worship, because when I was going to school, I used to look at the images, the stained glass window, and said to myself, something here, right? And a Lambo mall is sitting in that same place where you are right now. Actually, say his disgust over the monuments having and the Iron Creatures. Roman Catholic too. Have a good afternoon.
Okay, all right. Thanks a lot for calling, sir. Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, you're on the air. Okay, it's now 54 minutes past the hour of one. We have 6 minutes remaining, and we still have a few calls here. So if we can have some quick interventions, good afternoon and welcome. All right, well, can we get the
good
other
afternoon.
One? Yes, sir, go right ahead.
Yeah, I don't think me and you got enough time, though, but I can say something briefly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I get into this part of this Christianity and your comments on it, right, it worries me a lot to think, right, that you could quote chapter and verse and then talk about slavery and whatever in the Bible. But are there a lot of good things in the Bible that help fashion these people's lives? Blessed are the poor in heart. Love your neighbor as yourself. Do not be unkind to people. Speak the truth. Do not kill. Do not commit adultery. Aren't these not good tenets that we should... Do not, that's what the Bible said, do not commit adultery.
Is that a good
are
thing?
These not, are, just a minute, Peter, I'm asking a question. Are these not good tenets? Love your neighbor as yourself.
I think they are,
the
yeah.
Laws of, just a minute, the laws of forgiveness, like the woman at the well, the prostitute.
Yeah.
Are these not good things in the Bible? Now, I heard you said earlier that you only went, well, you went to the church or whatever, to you might have believed that you were good.
Because I thought that it would help her to be feeling that I was a good person, yeah.
And you thought that you did it to please her, that that you are a good boy.
Right, and I know I'm a good boy notwithstanding the fact
and
that
you
I don't
know,
go.
And you know that you're a good boy notwithstanding.
No, I know
but
that,
how the
yes.
People, how about the people who have come through the 50s, 40s, maybe in 1920 and places that believe so strongly and always were the right and just citizens of this country based off of the fact that they have been going to church
right.
And going to Sunday school?
What about the large number of people who are in Glendary who are now incarcerated for doing bad things that consider themselves Christians and went through the same route?
You
it's not an inoculation, sir.
You and I went through this already. We have said already. Right.
We don't have a lot of time. But let me just say this to you in terms of the first point you made. When I asked Sandy about the redeeming value, and I was hoping that Sandy could have said what you just said, right? What you have done is you have identified some of the more redeeming tenets of Christian principles that you have pulled from the Bible, which is fine. Some of them are controversial, others are not. But what I would say to you is that it makes a whole lot more sense to take those out, put those in a book, and you call it Education and Human Values, and give it to children to read. Because I think that it's far easier to distill it, take those comments out, put them somewhere, give them to children to read, and to give them a book that is embedded in all of this stuff that they're not going to read and understand. It's probably going to turn them off the whole thing.
Back to Peter, you said that the Bible is boring.
I said so, yes.
But it's boring to you.
Yeah, but it's boring to most people, sir.
But you, it can't be most people. Not in this society we're talking about.
How many people do you know that have read it cover to cover?
Listen, the majority of those people that you see in prison today, right?
Mm-hmm.
I doubt they went to church 10 times.
I would disagree with you.
I'm going to give you chapter and verse that I doubt that some of them went to church. The only time they went to church is to a funeral, and most of the stand outside.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm putting at you. Because I have the simple belief, right? That I went to school and a gentleman there, he was atheist. But we only knew that because we said, well, he don't go come in the hall for prayers. He don't do this and don't do that. But he has never yet in the classroom ever give us any impression or anything at all that he was atheist. But we don't know that from observing and the one or two other teachers that knew it.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I mean? And we have a right in this country. Because nobody don't kill nobody in here in Barbados because of the faith,
mm-hmm.
we don't do it. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get this discussion with you the next time you're on call. There are a lot more things that I have to discuss with you.
Call in on Tuesday, bright and early. Next week, Tuesday, I'm going to be here. And you and I can have an extensive conversation in the same way that I spoke to Sandy last time. Because I'm not running from the issue. And let's be clear, I've always argued that, you know, you and other persons who believe have the right to put your position on the table. And I will never say that you do not have that right. I may disagree with you, but certainly you can continue to express those views. It's a somewhat controversial issue. And I expect that it will continue so to be. There are a whole lot of comments now coming for you on WhatsApp. And also coming for me on WhatsApp. But it is 1:59. Ronnie is here to take us into the next hour or two of broadcasting. So that means that I unfortunately have to go. But it was good chatting with you, sir. And I hope that I can speak to you next Tuesday. Special thanks to all of the people who called and made the program what it was. The time went quickly today because we had some engaging calls. And I appreciate it very much hearing from you. Special thanks also to Mr. John Stout, who is...